Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekend, a glossy audio supplement on Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... It's been a sweltering week here in Israel, listener, with temperatures reaching up to 45 degrees Celsius, that's 113 degrees Fahrenheit, and the health ministry urging people to avoid outdoor activity wherever possible. Across the world, the climate emergency appears to have arrived in full force, with an unprecedented heatwave in the United States and Canada, flooding in Germany, China, Nigeria, Bangladesh and elsewhere, wildfires in Siberia, Italy, Greece, Turkey and Cyprus, and for dessert, a cold snap in Brazil that's covered parts of the country in snow. Meanwhile, the Israeli government is sending out mixed messages about the sincerity of its intentions to tackle the climate crisis, allocating budgets, setting grandiose targets, and introducing a first-ever carbon tax with one hand, yet taking away powers and investing in an oil-based future with the other. With me today to discuss extreme weather, the climate emergency, and the new Israeli government's plans to save the planet, we've got Haaretz's environmental affairs correspondent, Tzafrir Rinat. Welcome back to the pod, Tzafrir. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine.
Also joining us is Haaretz's science and archaeology editor, Ruth Schuster. How's it going, Ruthie?
Everything's great, Simon. You just keep cool.
All right, guys, I very much want to talk about what's going on here in Israel on the political level to combat the climate crisis. But given the extreme heat we've been suffering, I think we have to start there. This is the new normal, right?
I would agree with you that this is the new normal, but I would like to point out that onerous as our heat wave has been with temperatures of up to 45 degrees Celsius, we're still 5 degrees short of what British Columbia and Oregon and Washington State suffered about a month ago, in other words, or a few weeks ago. In other words, it's still cooler here. This is definitely the new normal, but the new normal is that we have no idea what to expect.
We can expect it to get worse, though, right? More heat wave days per summer, each summer?
Yes, I would say that we can expect things to get worse, by the way, in both directions. It's not just about the heat waves. As you pointed out, there is now snow in Brazil. This should not be happening. In other words, the extremes are becoming more extreme. It's not just the heat becoming more extreme and already reaching unsurvivable levels in some areas. In other areas, the cold is becoming more extreme. Plus, storms are becoming more extreme. They're becoming more violent. They tend to be lasting longer. Mm. All of these things are part of what you could call the new normal. But part of our new normal is having a very limited ability to forecast just how powerful given events will be, and in even local weather.
Mm. How bad is this heat wave? Do we have any figures yet on, say, increased mortality during this period?
Not that I'm aware of. Tzafrir, are you aware of figures that we have yet?
No, I'm not aware of any excessive mortality. Mm. And I must note that August in Israel normally is not really a very pleasant month. It's more, as Ruth said, it's much more difficult to extrapolate from what's happening in Israel about the future, but it's much more worrying when you look at what happened in British Columbia and the northwestern part of America. Mm. So there you see a dramatic difference which cannot be attributed to small seasonal variations. It's too extreme, and that's why there is a high probability that it had something to do with the mechanisms that are being changed by the global change, the global warming processes.
And part of the problem here is that because the mechanisms of climate are so incredibly complex and consist of so many parameters, we still do not have computer systems capable of forecasting them in any accurate way, certainly not at local levels. Plus, as Tzafrir said, these things have deviated far beyond the norm of seasonal change. Indeed, it is hard to say by 100% that any given weather event is connected to climate change. However, the probability has become pretty absolute In other words, the fact that we are changing the basics of our planet, such as the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, beyond anything the planet has known before, in a shorter time space than the planet has ever known before, we don't know where this is going to take us. And already what's been happening, for instance, in British Columbia and in North America, and the flooding in Asia and Indian subcontinent and Europe, these are all far beyond what the climate scientists had been forecasting for this time. It had been expected in some years, but it's happening now.
And what's happening in Israel is very much part of that?
I would say, and so Phil, you're welcome to correct me, that the heat wave we're experiencing now is not dissimilar to heat waves I've known since arriving in this country 40 years ago, but I'm getting a feeling that they're lasting longer. And we will very, very likely be experiencing heat waves far beyond this. We don't know. That's the whole point. Apropos excess morbidity, which you asked about before, there's a lag in these figures. And right now, it can also be very difficult to tease out what excess morbidity is caused by succumbing to a heat stroke, for instance, as opposed to COVID. In other words, right now, people are looking at excess morbidity more through the filter of what is COVID causing undiagnosed deaths, okay? But it is now becoming clear that some of these are also caused by extreme weather events.
And as you say, we're only now getting the morbidity figures from May 2020, when there were 157 heat-related deaths, but they were kind of lost in the figures, right?
I think they were very much lost in the figures, and I think that these things are... there are margins of error here. The present heat wave that we're having this week is described as very onerous, and it feels very onerous. When you step outside, you melt. But like I said, it's still short of what was happening in British Columbia. There's a great question here of norms. For instance, I believe it was in 2003 that tens of thousands of people died in France, in Paris, and in Europe because of the extreme heat wave there. But it wasn't as hot as what the people in Northern America were experiencing this week.
Where there were also hundreds of deaths.
Absolutely.
So let's move on to the new Israeli government's response to the crisis, shall we? I saw some what I thought were rather confusing reports this week about the government's plans. On the one hand, I saw that the government approved a budget this week that includes a special allocation of 625 million shekels, that's nearly $200 million, to fight climate change. And as our climate emergency correspondent Lee Yaron reported a couple of days ago, the government also approved the country's first carbon tax. But at the same time, Tzafrir, you reported that the cabinet's approved reforms that make it harder for the Environmental Protection Ministry to, well, protect the environment. What's going on there?
Well, I'm not sure those things are overlapping. I think that climate policy is still unclear because, not because of bad intentions or because they're not serious enough, but because I think the Israeli government still have no idea how to incorporate the carbon tax and the other measures it wants to take into economical and environmental policy. It will take time, and then we will be able to see if they're doing something which is going in the right direction. You must bear in mind that we are more in Israel. We have to be much more concerned about adaptation than mitigation when we consider the global context. We are not the one who will determine whether the world will be hotter or cooler. Adaptation is very crucial because we live in the Eastern Mediterranean. And there is a good chance that heat waves will be much more severe here. We don't know it for sure, but it's very probable. And I just want to add in relation to your previous question that what was very special about the exceptional in the last events in Israel was not the intensity of the heat. It was the length of the heat. It's two very long heat waves, the one that we experienced in May 2020. And the one that we're experiencing now. They're very long.
Right. They're not the traditional Khamsin 5 days of heat.
Yes, it's much longer than we are used to. We can't say for sure that it has to do with the climate change, but it is what makes them distinct. And you have to remember that. When you follow it and do the monitoring, you have to look into this aspect, and then you can evaluate the connections.
I would like to add in this context that I don't think it matters a whit if any particular event is connected with climate change or not, because what we have is a big global picture. So even if you say that heat waves are very much the norm in Israel, first of all, they are lasting longer. And second of all we have to do is look around us, okay, at the extreme melt during the last heat wave in Greenland, okay, or Siberia, where the permafrost is melting and so on. In other words, it's a distraction to say, well, we don't know if this event is connected with climate change per se or just normal fluctuations of weather and season and so on, when the big picture is glaringly, screamingly clear.
So this 625 million shekels that's been allocated, from what I understand, it's supposed to go towards advancing renewable energy, green transportation, clean air initiatives, and helping local authorities to create programs for coping with climate change. Is this part of the adaptation plan?
Most of it, yes. Not all of it. For example, transforming to green transportation is something that helps you to tackle emissions. But helping municipalities to prepare for climate change is a classical mitigation step which you take, and is important, because if you don't plan ahead, there's nothing you can do to make things work. You have to really have a good planning system, and planning costs money. You have to work with engineers, with city planners, with architects, and you have to prepare decades before things start to happen, because those are very complex infrastructures. For example, if you want to change the coastline of coastal cities in Israel, how you go about it? It's very difficult. It's very complicated. We can't even fix the coastline to defend the cliff from natural erosion. What we will do if the sea level rise will be such that we will be forced to withdraw from the coastline? These are very, very complicated issues, and you have to prepare. And some of the money will be allocated for those kind of things.
I completely agree with Tzfril that here in Israel, with all due respect to Startup Nation and so on, we are not the ones who are going to change the picture of climate change, it seems. Certainly not through our emissions or lack of emissions, and it's all about the adaptation. And as for adaptation, one of the things that we have to get used to is, for the first time in the history of civilization, a higher sea level. This is inevitable. It is inevitable that there will be more temperature increase, and it is inevitable that there will be sea level rise. Their degree and their timing remain unknown.
How does the carbon tax fit into this? We hear a lot about carbon taxes across the world, and how does the planned carbon tax in Israel compare to other countries' initiatives, and more importantly, will it be implemented?
The carbon tax in that... It's not finalized yet, so it's a sort of a declaration. Now, it's a technical thing. You have to decide how you implement it in a way that will really affect those industries or activities that emit a lot of carbon, because otherwise it will be a general tax on the general public. And the great emitters will not be the one who carry the main burden. And that's what, so you have to price it in the right way. You have to price it in a way that will fit specific sectors. It's been done in some countries, but it's something which is still being worked out in OECD countries and other parts of the world. There are a lot of arguments how to go ahead with it, at what kind of level of prices we should go and try to achieve in the next few years. And I think that the first step is really first to acknowledge that you have to use it. Because it's something which is essential. It's something which it's the only economical initiative which really can move things and change things.
However, I would like to point out that The Atlantic just ran an article about the death of the carbon tax. Already, the carbon tax rolled over and died in America, in the United States, because the general public did not get on board. In other words, the carbon tax has its inherent logic, of course, but it has been a problem to get people to accept it, to end their denial, and to get on board with the fact that what we really need to do is decarbonization. Okay? Like I say, The Atlantic just recently ran this piece.
Well, the Americans tend to believe in de-vaccination, not decarbonization.
Yes. In other words, there seems to be a certain problem with reality. But if I could just quote here The Atlantic for one second, the American carbon tax, an alluringly simple policy once hailed by environmentalists, etc., could not overcome its enduring unpopularity with the American public and died last month at its home in Washington, D.C. It was 47.
Well, people generally don't like taxes, right? I mean, that's kind of in the nature of taxes.
I love tax, Simon. How can you say that?
Listen, this tax is supposed to be implemented by the Environmental Protection Ministry, right? And you've reported that
I'm not sure it will be implemented by them. It will be implemented by the Finance Ministry or maybe the Energy Ministry, because the Ministry of Environmental Defense is not in charge of the energy policy in Israel, actually. They will be an important player. They will present
consultation role?
No, they will be the one who will say what is the right thing to do and what kind of results it can bring. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure they will be in charge. I don't think they will lead the process. No one will let them lead such
a... Does Tamar Zandberg, who's the environment minister, have any teeth? Does she possess
not
any
in
powers?
No, not in the energy sector, except for permits that has to do with Clean Air Act, but not directly. She cannot decide anything about electricity production policy in Israel. Mm. It's only the Ministry of Energy with the Ministry of Finance.
And presumably the Ministry of Defense, which has a say in everything.
Of course.
I would like to add at this point that apropos passing the carbon tax, which hasn't happened yet, this is where everything fell apart in the United States. It couldn't get through Senate. Mm. In other words, you have a great number of people who are in complete denial. And to know that, you don't have to do a straw poll of people support for carbon tax in the street. All you have to do is look, as Sophia pointed out, at who and who is not wearing masks, for instance. Mm. People are still not masking up. How many millions have died of COVID so far? How many people are dying of heat? But they are still in mass denial, because it's very, one of the hardest things that we can even look at and face is changing the way we live. Mm. We don't want to.
Mm. Tamar Zandberg, the minister, urged Bennett to declare the climate crisis as a state of emergency, a national state of emergency.
So what? He will declare a state of emergency. This is a country that lives in a permanent state of emergency. So we have a national emergency. So what? What kind of practical steps are you going to take? What kind of changes are you going to take? We saw during the history of Israel that once reality forces us, we do certain things. For example, desalinization is a classical example. Mm. It comes with a price, but everyone realized that without desalinization facilities, now we will be in a big problem. But when people realize that there is no other alternative, you can see that the country built desalinization facilities. I'm afraid that other environmental issues still didn't force themselves hard enough. And when they will force themselves, it could be too late for many, many things that are important to us. And that's the problem, declaring a state of emergency. What does it mean?
That is indeed inane on a morning that rockets are falling on Kiryat Shmona. It sounds a little inane. We do live in a state of emergency. And that's part of the problem. In other words, here in Israel, leaving aside how much effect we can have on the rest of the planet, for each and every person, you have to say to yourself, what matters to me this morning? In Kiryat Shmona, it's not climate change. Mm.
My point is that the Minister of Environment, Tamar Zandberg, or it doesn't matter who, must realize that he has to solve the burning and the most important issues that the environment in Israel faces, which are pollution of all kinds, the destruction of open landscapes, and so on. If he will make progress in these issues, one of the byproducts will be to have progress in climate change, mitigation and adaptation. Because if you plan a better cities and if you treat waste in a more sustainable way, then you also get benefits, climate benefits, important climate benefits.
Mm. Is the announcement that Israel will cut carbon emissions by 85% by the middle of the century significant? Is that declarative? Does that have any practical ramifications?
It's very late.
It's something that must be done because...
legally because of the Paris climate
agreement? The Paris Agreement has one big advantage. It pulled everyone in. Mm-hmm. It has one big disadvantage. So everyone is in, but they're not obliged to do anything.
They're not fudging. There's a lot of fudging going on.
Yes, of course a lot of fudging, but you can see that the game has changed and now everyone has a very ambitious target to 2050. Well, that's great. 2050. That's so far away. What's the problem? I can, you know, write any number for 2050. Do I have any plan that really commits me to do anything?
Well, some countries. Do we have a plan?
Well, yes, we do have some plans to the coming decade. Yes, we do. And other countries have plans and are already carrying them out. Mm. So you can say that in this sense, we are not in the situation that we were about 10, 20 years ago when no one was doing anything. We are not there.
When you say we, are we talking Israel or no, the world?
The international community.
Okay.
Let's call it the international community.
Okay.
We are not there. We moved.
Mm.
But we are moving so slow behind what we should do.
Yes.
So far, so slow. That's the problem.
Mm.
Okay, we have renewable energy, but they are still very, very small in their scale. We are planning and preparing ourselves to electrify the vehicle that we drive, but still we are doing it in such a small scale.
I would like to point, apropos electric vehicles, that as long as your power station is using coal,
yeah,
you have achieved nothing. In other words, you're simply passing down the pollution. So there are existing technologies which could significantly mitigate this situation, but they're not widespread, they're not being implemented enough, and as Tzafiril said, things are happening way too slowly, as we see from the extreme events already happening.
Mm. I mean, we have seen a slew of, I don't know whether to call them decisions or laws or declarations. The government, for example, also decided that it's going to reconsider the controversial agreement to transport oil from the Gulf states to Europe via Israel. That's good news, right?
That's great news.
Well, I mean, because it was an economic decision, and now they're reconsidering. Does that give
you some
hope?
I dare them to cancel this agreement.
You think the political pressure will be too great?
It's a strategic agreement from the point of view of a government that is not, you know, it's not really environmental government. Let's not delude ourselves. For a government to cancel a strategic plan like this will be something that will be a really dramatic breakthrough in environmental policy. I don't believe they will do it. They will probably find some kind of explanation or a way out which says, okay, we will limit the agreement to 10 years and then we will review it again or something like that. They will find a way.
Mm.
It's already going on. It's not something that they discussed and are about to sign. They signed it and it's already, you have to stop the agreement, go back, and you know, it has all kind of financial and political ramifications.
Well, this goes to what I was saying before, which is that it's very clear to most people who are not in denial what needs to be done, but the political will is not there, especially in our democratic countries. Well, why do I say especially in our democratic countries? In our democratic countries, we have a special problem because they need to stand for re-election. And it's very hard to find a politician who says, yes, I'm going to make everything change. You are going to have to live much more simply. Vote for me.
That's why I think that the most rational way is to try to develop complete environmental policy, which doesn't tackle climate change directly and say, I'm doing it because I want to avoid climate catastrophe. No, I want to build better cities. I want to protect you from pollution. I want to recycle our waste and not throw it in the Negev. I want to do all those things and many other things. I want to prevent flooding because I don't want people to drown. So I have to plan the cities better. And I want to make it easier for you to live, to go about in summer. So I will not cut off trees. I will plant more trees. And all of this is connected to people's welfare, to their immediate welfare. And people can be convinced when they see that you are doing something to improve their immediate welfare. If you tell them, well, I have to achieve the 85% goal of the Paris Agreement, I don't think most Israelis are too concerned about this.
Mm.
I don't think young people, yes, they are, you know, they're in already in a trauma. Greta Thunberg put them in a trauma. They are traumatized. She traumatized them, which is a good thing, you know, it motivates them. I understand that. Mm. It's good. But if you ask the majority of Israelis and you want to convince them, I think talking about their immediate welfare or their short-term welfare is much more effective and will bring the results that you want anyway.
Mm. Promise an air conditioner for every home.
No, promise them a system that will make their house, for example, better isolated from the heat and cold without using air condition, but will make it as comfortable as it is with air condition. It will make their house maybe a little bit more expensive, but it's still something that will improve their welfare and their quality of life.
I think Tefril makes an incredibly important point here. Indeed, what you need to appeal to is your innate selfishness. Now, air conditioners are not a solution. They are a palliative. In fact, they're an anti-solution, because every time you turn on the air conditioner, which we really need to do today in this blistering heat in Tel Aviv, you make the situation a little bit worse. And this all boils down to smarter architecture that may cost a little more, but if your home is insulated, then you won't need the air conditioner or the heater in winter and so on.
Mm. And Israel, one would think, is in a pretty good position to take advantage of technological solutions to this kind of problem.
Let's take, for example, mass transplantation. Mm. I think everyone will agree that this is one of the most urgent needs in Israeli society. Without mass transportation, the life here will be hellish.
Yeah.
They will be hellish anyway, but a little bit more hellish. Now, if you make people understand that you need to develop these mass systems of transportation, and it will be better that they will not pollute, and so we have to electrify them, and it will be better if we electrify them by using renewable energies. If you put all this package together, it makes sense. It makes sense to people, and I think makes sense even politically. And this is a very huge advantage if you want to move forward.
Mm, but this kind of project is a government project, not an individual project.
Yes,
and it needs the government to be engaged.
Yes, but if you want to be a government that is elected and you want to say, look, one of the things that I want to do is make your life easier on the road, it becomes a really crucial issue.
Mm.
Because transportation and housing have become, in Israel, they were not so much crucial in the past, but they are now.
Mm. Certainly for anybody who has to drive through Tel Aviv these days.
And anyone who wants to live in a house, but in a normal house, not just in a neighborhood that someone built very quickly, and where you are stuck, and you're stuck with your private car.
Mm. So the bottom line is that, much like coronavirus, we're just going to have to learn to live with global heating and make the best of it.
That's a fact.
There's no question about it. This is not avoidable anymore. As I said, more heating, more change in both directions. In other words, there are going to be places where it's going to get colder, or times. I wouldn't say so much places as periods. The spikes are going to be greater. And yes, we have to learn to live with this. And we have to learn to live with this without instantly resorting to polluting palliatives such as air conditioning and heaters.
Mm.
We live in Kef with COVID and climate change. That will be our new slogan.
Yes!
Yeah, it reminds me of fighting terrorism as if there were no peace process, and making peace as if there were no terrorism.
Yeah,
it's
Rabin,
the same.
Rabin said that.
Yeah, the same equation. Guys, I'm afraid we're out of time for this week. Thank you so much, Tefril.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthie.
Thank you, Simon and Tefril.
Thanks to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back again on Monday with another episode of Haaretz Weekly. Until then, Shabbat Shalom from Tel Aviv.